I changed a lot of the talk today because there's been so many Cyber Resilience Act presentations in the last few days, and in particular yesterday there was a half-day DevRoom on the CRA in practice, and so to avoid duplicating what's already been said in those presentations, I changed a lot of the slides, and so I hope I'm still within the scope of what I was meant to talk about. So the talk is aimed to be an introduction to the work that we're doing on the Cyber Resilience Act. And in particular, we find that it's easy enough for the larger entities to get involved. And so the aim is to try and get smaller entities to also participate. But I didn't want to give the impression that actually the CRA is going to affect everyone. So maybe it should have been actually a question, is the CRA for everyone? Or maybe it's CRA information for everyone, including small projects. The other reason I changed the talk is because I've been talking to so many people in the last 5 days about the Cyber Resilience Act, and it's really surprising, and you know, you have to be reminded of this constantly, how different the levels of awareness are and how different the interests are in different topics. And so, you know, once again, I had to change a lot of slides, and this is a little bit of a mishmash of topics, but I hope there's something in it for everyone. So, you know, one of the topics that you know I generally forget is something you still need to talk about is the timeline. So, this is important because the Cyber Resilience Act was voted on and adopted by the EU institutions at the end of 2024. And so, sometimes the media talks about it's done, it's adopted, and it's entered into force. And then people might look around and say, well, nothing really changed. And you might get the impression that the Cyber Resilience Act was no big deal. But the law is in force, but the fines for not applying the law are not yet applicable. So there will be a smaller part of the Cyber Resilience Act on September 11 will become applicable, the fines for vulnerability reporting, but the main provisions are not coming in until December 11, 2027. So we're still in the phase of working out how we're going to comply, and then what I'm going to show today is that we're also still in the phase of drafting the Cyber Resilience Act. So as I mentioned, the reason we want to focus on small projects is that the larger entities, like I work for Eclipse Foundation, and we have policy people like myself, and we have lawyers, and we have people who can work on compliance, and then once we have to do this work anyway for the software projects that we host, then it's kind of easy to apply this to the other projects that we also host. So for us, we're kind of the easy case for doing CRA compliance. And what we want to do though is one of the roles of code hosting FOSS foundations is to benefit the ecosystem in general and to bring stability to the ecosystem. And so we try to make our materials available in the way that's most useful for everyone. And so what we did is we publish all our information on our website, and then also we went a bit further and we created this coalition called the Open Regulatory Compliance Working Group, and that is a place where everyone who has to deal with the Cyber Resilience Act, and that can be people who love open source and it can be people who hate open source, as long as you have to deal with Cyber Resilience Act compliance, this working group is a place to coordinate and make that work as least painful as possible. So that's the Open Regulatory Compliance Working Group webpage, and there's a QR code, and I'll show that at the end, but I'm not going to dwell on that for the moment. So in the Cyber Resilience Act, the main categories of people who have obligations are the manufacturers and the students, and manufacturers and stewards, and then the other category. And the other category doesn't really get a formal name, but the verb providing is used at some point, so we could call them providers of software. And so these are the ones that are most likely to be exempt. And so I talk about exemption because when you talk to small entities, the first thing some of them want to hear is, am I exempt, or how do I get exempt? And the focus is on maximizing the ability to ignore the Cyber Resilience Act. And so you can look into the text, and so this is just a little small introduction to your reading EU legislation, because when you look at the text of the Cyber Resilience Act, you have this sentence and it says your free and open source software is only covered when, and because of the word only there, that sounds like this is going to be, this is the exemption now. So what is the exemption? Free and open source software is only covered if it's made available on the market. And so that would look like the, and then you could start looking at, you know, what does it mean to be made available on the market? But when you look at the scope of the Cyber Resilience Act, it actually only applies to software that's made available on the market, or digital products with products with digital elements made available. So that's not the unique criteria that makes free and open source software exempt. So then you have to go back, and then you have to look at, well, you know, there's another part of that same sentence, and it talks about when projects that are not monetized by their manufacturers, and you know, maybe this is the actual part that differentiates between free software and general software that has to apply the Cyber Resilience Act. And so the point is, the word monetized is not really defined in e-legislation, or at least it's not clear to us at the moment. So making available on the market is a term, and I'll come back to where that can be found, but monetized was new to us. And so the point here is that even for people who've been reading this for, you know, 2 or 3 years, you know, the words are not always clear. So you might be thinking then, well, why don't we just ask for some clarity? Why don't we ask them to fix this apparent bug in the text? And the issue is that it's not always compatible with the objectives of the Cyber Resilience Act to clarify these things, because the goal of the Cyber Resilience Act is to increase cybersecurity. And so if there's a real focus on how to get into the excluded category, and you know, how to define what's excluded, then you know, this is nice because legal clarity is nice, but then it also makes it easier for people who are focusing on how do I get into this category of, you know, not having to deal with the Cybersecurity Act or Cyber Resilience Act. And so that's, you know, that's not the objective. The objective is to increase cybersecurity, and so it's not something that's necessarily going to be fixed by asking questions or more legislation. And then, you know, like another example is, there is a part of the Cyber Resilience Act that says that unfinished software is not covered by obligations. And so in the early days, we thought maybe we could say that all free software is unfinished, because the problem there is that unfinished software is defined as software that's made available for a limited period, and that's, you know, that's not how we make our software available. So it's probably not of any use to us, and it's been told to us that we probably shouldn't try to use it. So then the bits of clarity we do have in the text focus on these above things: the idea of charging for software, or charging for support beyond just covering your own costs, and then processing personal data. And that's just, you know, if that's your business model rather than directly getting cash, then you can't claim to be non-profit if you're scooping up lots of personal data and selling that later. So these are the criteria. There, again, it's not always clear at what point the connection has to exist for the obligation to exist. You know, if I have ads on my website, does that make every download from my website a commercial act? So some of these things are still being defined. And one of the challenges is that product legislation in the EU never generally applied to software in the past, and so it's all been developed with physical products that in mind, and so now we're trying to use all these terminology that is being shoehorned into the software context. So what we're doing to get the smaller projects to be better represented is that we don't expect smaller projects to be able to get involved and have a full-time person spending lots of time and giving lots of attention to this. But what we would like is to be able to raise the level of awareness and make enough information available so that at least small entities, when they see the work that's being published by, for example, by Eclipse Foundation, but also other entities, we'd like to be able to, you know, get feedback and, you know, hear whether this information is useful, is it sufficient, and, you know, in general, what are the needs of smaller projects and smaller companies, so that we can better serve the needs of the community as a whole. So I had two topics, and then I inserted a quick topic number zero. So the While we were working on the Cyber Resilience Act, I kept on thinking about this idea that policy is the new licensing. And it's important because in the free software world, you know, for 40-something years, we always defined our own legal context because we had our licenses. That was most of the legal discussion, and then a small amount of discussion on trademarks and association law, maybe, you know, contribution policies. But in general, it was something we did internally, and that was nice and comfortable, and we could define the time frame. And then what's changed now is that we're getting all these pieces of regulation which impose obligations on us from the outside, and this is, it's, you know, on one hand it's completely new, on the other hand the timetable is imposed as well, so if we choose not to participate, then it's it just means that we don't get taken into account during the drafting of the text. So it really, we have to change the way as an ecosystem we organize and participate in the development of our legal infrastructure. So then getting on to the real part one, what I'd like to talk about is the idea of why we should be in favor of doing more than the minimum. So we, you know, I started off by saying that people sometimes try to get into the exemption, and the idea is that, you know, nobody likes to have obligations imposed from outside, especially ones that we didn't like and we mightn't really like the way they were written. And so then, you know, the default mindset is, well, how do we get into a situation where we can ignore that and do our own thing? But so I'd like to make the case for why we should try and do more than the minimum. So the first point is that the smaller projects may be exempt from the Cyber Resilience Act. However, in general, I think it's true that projects are largely motivated by having a great user base and having a large and interested user base. Preferably also a user base that pays for the software. That's the ideal situation. And so one thing that we can improve by doing some of the CRA work, even when it's voluntary, is that it makes it easier for upstream or downstream to then use your software. And so if you want to make your software more attractive, this is a good way to do it. And so we can do that in our own way, but there's also a mechanism in the Cyber Resilience Act which allows you to get recognition for the compliance work that you've voluntarily done, and that's the Atta